That's the Young Rascals' Good Lovin' from 1966, a monster hit that still sounds pretty good today. Thank you for spending your time with us tonight on Coast to Coast AM. We're looking back on the big stories of 2014 from the as seen through the prism of Coast to Coast AM. That is weird, wacky, wild stuff, conspiracies, paranormal, UFOs. And as it is important, as you've heard our first two guests, it's important to distinguish credible cases from incredible cases. If you're going to take this stuff seriously, as we do, then you have to be able to point out the cases or incidents or events which are not credible, for which there are more rational explanations than the unknown or the mysterious. That's the way that you get people to take you seriously. So the fact that we shoot down certain cases, certain theories, doesn't mean that we're hostile to the topic. It means that we're taking them seriously and giving them the kind of attention that they deserve. My next guest, Alejandro Rojas, is somebody who does that pretty much every day. He works for something called Open Minds Productions. It puts out radio and TV shows, videos. It hosts UFO conferences, and it probably is the recipient of more UFO videos than just about any place in the world, because if people come up with some unknown object in the sky, that's where they send it. And Alejandro, more often than not, figures out ways to explain the kinds of things that are seen on these videos, and people are not happy when they hear that there's a prosaic explanation, that it doesn't show an alien craft, but that means that the cases that can't be explained in prosaic terms are all that more credible. When we come back, we're going to jump into the credible cases of 2014, along with other UFO-related topics, and then in hour four, we'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions. So much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. My next guest, Alejandro Rojas, is a radio host for Open Minds Radio. He also works on Open Minds Productions as a writer and research specialist, and focuses on UFO and related phenomena. For several years, he was the spokesperson for MUFON and served as their director of public education. He's also been a boots-on-the-ground guy out there doing field work, investigating UFO cases, and deals with this stuff pretty much every day. Alejandro, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be back.
Good. You know, we'll talk about specific cases in a moment. I want to start at the beginning, because both of my earlier guests, we sort of shot down certain theories, certain cases, and I don't want to make it seem like we're hostile to these topics, but I wonder if you could address the idea of it being how important it is to distinguish the credible from the not so credible, especially in this field, UFOs.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because there are times where you just feel kind of like, man, you know, everything coming in seems to be something that is recognizable. And, you know, a lot of people, especially people who come to the website, they don't want to see that. They want to see the crazy wild stuff. But it is important, because, I mean, if we're looking for what is going on here and trying to kind of distill if there is a phenomena and the nature of the phenomena, we need to have things that are truly anomalous and not just, you know, dust particles or balloons or things like this. And I think it's also really important, with technology changing, for us to be able to recognize some of the new technology that is out there that can be mysterious in the sky. For instance, drones and the different configurations of drones. Not only is that important just because we can then rule that out as something anomalous, but there are hoaxers. What we've seen in the last couple of years are marketers who are creating drones and trying to create these UFO stories and coming out and saying, hey, that was just us, you know, come check out at our new planetarium, for instance, in a case in Canada last year. So that way we can identify, you know, when it is possibly a hoaxing event.
And by the time you expose it as a hoax, they've already got all the hits they want. They've got all the attention they needed.
Yeah, exactly. I heard you a little bit with the last interview talking about people, you know, already getting what they want out of it before it is exposed as a hoax. And that's true. And because that is the case, that just influences people to create more and more hoaxes. And because it is successful for either marketing or making money on YouTube.
How does it work for you? Do people send you these videos, the people who create them or who take the videos? Or do you have a team that sort of scours the internet looking for any kind of UFO discussions or videos that pop up?
It's both, but more of the latter, actually. We do scour the internet on a daily basis, looking for the best stories out there. We mostly look for sources that are mainstream media. And luckily, there is mainstream media around the world that's covering this topic. So that's really helpful. Often, those come along with some sort of analysis. If not, then we kind of take a look at it from, you know, our years of experience doing this. However, if we can't make the decision, then we go to some of our experts. And funny enough, over the years, our top experts, our go-to guys, are the same ones Lee Spiegel goes to. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes I'll send them an email and say, hey, what do you guys think of this? And in fact, in one of these latest cases, they replied, well, here's what we told Lee just earlier today. So we'll often coordinate. And if I get something good, I'll send it to Lee and make him aware of it. And then, you know, bring him in on the loop when we get this analysis back.
You mentioned a lot of the stories that you pursue are first reported in mainstream media, meaning local media, I would assume. Speak to me about that phenomena, how local media will report this stuff. You know, I know that, you know, because we see it here in Las Vegas, they'll all often nudge or laugh or something, kind of a uncomfortable little chuckle, the anchors, after they will report a story. So local media will cover it within certain contexts, but national media, not so much.
National media does hit on some of these stories when they go viral, but it certainly isn't as common. Local media is more friendly with it, and there are some markets that are really friendly with it. Of course, your market is an ideal situation where you have someone who's kind of an expert in the topic in the area, but there are other areas where there are reporters who are really interested in the topic and do take it seriously, and so they cover it often. And what's really cool, and we've had at least one situation in this last year that I listed in my top 10 UFO stories, is when reporters go out to investigate UFOs and they see one themselves.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get into the UFO cases specifically in a couple of minutes. I want to touch on something else first. One of the topics that you and I had discussed that we were going to cover tonight is discoveries in astrobiology. And, you know, all kinds of reports, people who see images from Mars and they figure out that it's something anomalous, whereas they, you know, there are generally explanations for what it can turn out to be. Same thing with the moon. And I touched on that with Lee Spiegel earlier. But this story about methane being discovered on Mars, I mean, it's hard to just wipe that away and dismiss it.
Yeah, and that's what's really exciting about these latest discoveries is that it is mainstream. And I think, you know, it's not as sexy a story as some of this other UFO stuff, so it doesn't garner the biggest hits on our website, but we still cover this sort of thing. But if you look at this, the scientists get treated very much like we do in the UFO field. Even when they are scientists, some of them NASA scientists, who have really great evidence for life, they are often poo-pooed or dismissed, and people kind of roll their eyes when they hear from them. In particular, there's this group at the Center of Astrobiology at the University of Buckingham. They've got several meteorites that they feel they've found microbes in, that they've done studies to show this. In fact, we had one of them at the UFO Congress last year, and we had Lee Spiegel interview him, and we posted that on the internet, and it went viral. It made a lot of news because he said that there is even evidence that essentially NASA thought so lightly of, it was destroyed, which he believed was proof of extraterrestrial life, microbes. I think in this case, they were on the moon. Either way, what's more interesting is a recent story has a group of international scientists who are now coming out and saying, well, we also have a meteorite that we think has microbes. And then, of course, we saw the Russians coming out and saying they found plankton that survived in space on the International Space Station. So all of this is really big news. More and more scientists are becoming convinced that they have evidence and or proof that life, extraterrestrial life, exists.
I mean, it's astonishing for NASA to even creep up to the edge of that. They've seemed so many mm-hmm. times to be hostile to even talking about it.
Yeah.
To go ahead and say, yeah, well, we think we found methane. It could be from an organic source. That's amazing to me.
Right. And what's interesting is the ESA, the European Space Agency, said there was water. They had evidence of water on Mars a couple of years before NASA admitted that they felt their evidence came to that same conclusion.
Have you seen the stories about lakes, liquid water on Mars? We had a caller who was telling us about it last week. I looked it up and saw the images that are on there. Have you seen that?
I have seen that. I've seen those for years, and there are times where you will see scientists, even JPL scientists, talking about the possibility of standing water on Mars. It used to think that the temperature was such that it couldn't exist on the surface, but now they're thinking that perhaps there are geysers that are spewing out the water that is feeding some of these possible lakes or rivers that may still exist on Mars. So it's exciting stuff. There's a lot more to be discovered there.
I mentioned this to Lee earlier this evening about NASA sponsoring this conference that where they talked about the possibility of ET life and the spokesperson saying, you know, we need to get ready for this thing so it doesn't catch us blindsided. My jaw dropped when I realized that really is a conference, that they really are holding it, and NASA is a co-sponsor because they've seemed so hostile to the idea of extraterrestrial life. Not to mention UFOs, but have seemed so hostile to it, for them to suddenly take the step of speaking openly about it, giving it a measure of credence, is amazing to me.
It is, but I think NASA's just really skeptical and careful often, maybe overly so. So kind of like what we were just talking about, is that when we talk about UFO stories, we end up debunking a lot of them, and it makes us look hostile to the topic of UFOs when we're really not. We're looking for really solid evidence. I think what's exciting about this last convention they had, which was open and free to the public, which is really exciting, is that they're finally starting to get ready, because I think a lot of scientists still, like we said, a growing number think that extraterrestrial life is out there. If we come across that evidence, I think that's going to be a big, big deal. I think that's for you and I, people who kind of are already used to the idea, it might not be that big of a deal. But for others out there who just aren't sure, when they're told extraterrestrial life exists, I think that's a big deal, especially if it's in our nearest neighbor. It makes it that much more likely, and for people to think, wow, if it's our nearest neighbor has microbes, there's got to be somewhere out there where there's intelligent life. And that makes people review everything that we do here, I think, in a totally different light.
It also makes it more acceptable for scientists who might have had a closet interest in this topic to go ahead and talk about it. Because, you know them. You've talked to a lot of these guys who are interested in it. I'm sure you have contacts with them online, who people who take it seriously, but by God, don't quote me on it.
Yeah, we had a scientist who works with SETI. He's worked with NASA. In fact, he writes children's books, Jeffrey Bennett, that were on the space shuttle. He is an example of someone who, when you really prod him and at a conference talked about it, he believes in extraterrestrial life, extraterrestrial civilizations. Michio Kaku does. And I think that a lot of scientists are probably pinging these guys and saying, hey, wow, tell me more about this, because it looks like life exists, so maybe it's time for us to start really taking a harder look in this area.
Let's talk about some cases from 2014. You posted a list of top 10 UFO videos of 2014 on your on the Open Mind site. Let's go through them. What do you think is what's the number one case? What's the best one?
It's hard to say, but I think what gets me most excited and is the night vision cases. And that's because more and more people are getting out there with their night vision, and so we're capturing more interesting things. And it's something that an individual can do. So like any of your listeners can go out there and invest. It is an investment because the equipment's expensive, in some night vision equipment, and possibly get some really startling imagery. What we've seen mostly are triangular configurations. We had a great one in May in North Carolina that was caught by a guy who's spent his whole career in the military. And in fact, right now he trains combat, hand-to-hand combat. And he goes out to look for UFOs with his night vision. And one time he caught this really strange triangular formation. I love this one. We had Mark D'Antonio look at it from MUFON. He thought that it might be a refueling operation. The problem with that idea for me is that it was over a populated area. And this is a situation where, like, a jet comes up to a larger plane and it refuels in the air. So it's sort of dangerous, especially because the witness did not see any lights. He only caught it on his night vision. And that's entirely possible because jets do go into a covert mode where they can only be seen with night vision by other pilots and from ground personnel. But that's not something that's done like in a highly populated area, which is where this guy saw this. We also had Ben Hansen look at it, who's a night vision specialist, and he agrees. He doesn't think that it was a refueling operation. He thinks it's much stranger than that. And then there's another one from Michigan that was just caught in November, just early last month. Same thing, a triangular formation that cruises above, and it's just a really strange video. And this one, they shot some lasers at it, which is a common thing for people looking for UFOs, but it's something that I certainly do not recommend.
No.
To shoot lasers at aircraft, and you don't know for sure, you know, it's something anomalous or not man-made. So that's not a good idea.
No, gosh. I mean, I guess you capture an interesting thing. It's a triangular shape. You don't know what it is. I mean, it's a UFO in the strictest sense of the word, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So those are really exciting ones. So I always tell people, you know, get some night vision and get out there. The best way to see UFOs is to go look.
You know, the triangular UFOs were around for a while. It seemed like there was a peak of them a couple of years ago. Do you still get as many? Has there been a spike in the number of sightings of those, or has it tailed off, or what?
No, we still get them, I think, just as much as ever. And I think it's we've been able to show that the majority of sightings have come more recently in the last, say, couple of decades. But last year, there was a book written by a researcher who called UFOs or triangular UFOs. He says he has been able to find reports that went all the way back to the 1800s. So it's a phenomenon that's been around for quite some time.
Hard to say that it's a military project if it dates back to the 1800s.
Well, exactly. And the phenomenon has happened in the UK and in Belgium. Belgium Air Force looked into it. This because they had a bunch of them in the 90s. Both cases, these governments reached out to the Americans and said, is this one of your black projects or something? And the Americans said no. In fact, Nick Pope of the UK says the Americans responded and said, no, we were going to ask you the same thing because we're seeing those over here.
Well, I've seen Russian video of gigantic triangles from the late 80s, early 90s floating over there. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing. Was told by their military folks that they had made contact with the U.S. and that we had told them it wasn't ours. I guess we could lie to them. But the fact that they were asking suggests that it wasn't Russians that were doing it either. Goes back to sort of the Foo Fighter stories, you know. Everybody thought it was Germans. The Germans thought it was us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting also that the triangular UFO videos that I've got listed here, the only two are from the night vision because, you know, often the balloons can be floating and like the Chinese lanterns, and they look like they're in a triangular pattern. But, of course, if you have three balloons in the sky, they're going to look like a triangle. So, but those were really interesting triangle ones. The cover one I have here, too, I think is really cool. This is one from the Netherlands earlier this year, a blue UFO. And essentially, this is near The Hague along the Rhine River. But over some of the docks there, there was a guy who was filming some of the boats, and there was just something, a blue object, it even looks kind of cylindrical, hovering over the docks. He filmed this thing for some time before it disappeared. But this is one of the weirdest but coolest videos out there. It's actually covered by the local news there. And it's one of the stories that I haven't seen many others pick up on. But it did well for us. And for me, that one's still unidentified as well.
I always like the cases where you have pilots involved or police officers, mm-hmm. people who are trained observers who are credible to begin with. You've got a good police case on your list from Pennsylvania that we'll talk about when we come back. Also, a UFO video from Hong Kong that's been seen all over the world. Much more to come here as we delve into the best UFO cases of 2014 with Alejandro Rojas here on Coast to Coast AM. You probably heard the news earlier this week that Joe Cocker died. I imagine, as I was reading the stories about his life, it occurred to me, I imagine that no one was more surprised than Joe Cocker himself that he had lived to the age of 70. I mean, he was a guy who, I guess you could say, pushed the edge of the envelope in many ways. A hard partying guy, but what a unique talent. No one sounded like him. And I figured that song, Space Captain, was a nice fit for Coast to Coast. If you've ever heard the lyrics, you know what I mean. We're talking with Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds about UFO cases and similar phenomena, the best of 2014. When we come back, we pick up the list right after this. Back to the top cases, UFO cases of 2014 with Alejandro Rojas. Alejandro, I mentioned about credibility of the witnesses who make the reports is really important. You had at least one of your top 10 cases that came from the police officers came out to investigate and they saw it. Tell me, it's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that one's really cool. That was in Lower Paxton Township in late August. And essentially, the witness had seen something strange flying around for a while. She said it was changing colors. And she got her husband. He started watching it. She got her neighbor. They started watching it. And after a while, she said about 20 minutes, she started to get scared. So she called the cops. The cops came out and they reported that they also saw it and could not determine what it was. They got some video of it that the local news had shown. Unfortunately, the station took down that video, but luckily I still have at least one still that I put up on there and the rest of the quotes from the police. They did talk to a police representative and he said, yeah, we sent some police out there, a sergeant and a corporal, to verify what the people were seeing. And they said that our officers saw something that was out of the ordinary for the night sky. So it's kind of cool. There are cases where police officers will tell the witnesses, yeah, I don't know what that is. That's really weird. But then they will kind of backtrack. And later they'll tell the news, well, I'm not so sure. It was probably this or that. But this is a cool one because the police and even the police representative, PR guy, stood behind that report and they said, no, we don't know what it was. We thought of possibly a helicopter, we thought of other things, and it goes down as an unknown. So that was a really cool story.
Years ago when I first started chasing this stuff myself, you'd contact police sources if they and ask them how do you handle a UFO report? And in general, they would keep people on the line long enough to figure out if they were crazy and a danger to themselves, but they didn't take the reports all that seriously. But when you get cops that see them these things for themselves, you would think, well, they're not making it up. That said, you know it as well as I do that the skeptics or debunkers who don't want this to be true will dismiss this out of hand. Well, cops can make mistakes just as well as anybody else can. Same with pilots. Even though, you would think that, at least they're not hoaxing it, that they are fairly trained, credible observers.
Right. It makes it more easily, you can rule out hoaxes because they're going to get in trouble. But also, if they're coming out and they're verifying that this is an unknown, they're putting their own credibility on the line. Even police officers, they get a lot of teasing. I've known police officers who are into UFOs and they always get little notes and little jokes, and it's not easy. This isn't something people want to live with. So if they're willing to go out there and say, yeah, I verified that that was something peculiar, they could have just as easily done like those officers I had talked about previously. Or, when I was investigating cases with MUFON, there were several times where the witnesses said, yeah, the police came out, they said it was weird, but they left. And those police would not go on the record and they would not talk about it. So that these guys would do that is important, and it must mean that they felt it was strange enough that they would put their, they would put it out there and stand by their original testimony.
Seems to me in general that the value of UFO video evidence has been diminished somewhat. As you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, there people have so much CGI software at home, they can make these things up, and they do for fun or profit or just to be mean. And then you have drone technology that can be as often, I would think, mistaken for a flying saucer of some sort or alien craft. It must be tough. A lot tougher now than it used to be to distinguish between something truly anomalous and something that somebody just made up.
Yeah, especially with the drone thing, it's become really, really difficult because they can, they can move around and maneuver in the air very quickly. Also, people have been putting LEDs, and part of the problem, I mean, it's technology is a different sort. The LEDs becoming so small and taking so little power. Now people are putting those on balloons, on kites, on radio-controlled airplanes. This happens a lot with radio-controlled airplanes. Now people are putting LEDs, and those things really zip around the sky very quickly. And so people are calling and reporting that. And it's kind of interesting because then finally someone will come forward and say, "Oh, sorry, that was me. I fly my planes in this area at night." And often the witnesses will be shown that video and say, "Oh, we found out what it is." And, there's a small percentage of times, but often the witness will say, "No. I'm sure that's the same place and the same time, but I don't think that's what I saw. What I saw was more mysterious."
Then you throw into the mix military technology, the kind of
Yeah.
advances that are made out at Area 51, the strange craft, triangular things, weird drones,
Yeah.
things that can look like insects that for all intents and purposes, they might as well, some of these things might as well be flying saucers.
Well, I always think back on a case that you broke. I always think back on the Bob Lazar case and the video that John Lear had gotten over the Area 51 area when Bob Lazar told him to go out there. That video is pretty extraordinary. I mean, that is some really, really strange stuff. And that always sticks with me because when we go out on these investigations and look at UFOs, we really have no idea what sort of secret projects are out there and the capabilities of that technology. So it's essentially impossible to really rule that out in practically any case.
One of your top 10 cases is a UFO, in the strictest sense of the definition of the word, over Hong Kong. A whole bunch of people are outside, some sort of a protest. Tell me the story of that one.
Yeah, a lot of my colleagues on this one will disagree with me, and I just kind of want them to prove it. This is one of those, like you talked about, that many people think is probably a drone. And this was over protests in Hong Kong that happened in September, where people filled the streets. Now, this has happened before, where in Brazil they had protests and people had gotten pictures of the drone that the news was using to film the protest, and they thought it was a UFO. In that case, it was just pictures. In this case, it's an actual video, and this drone was caught on video by the BBC. The BBC showed some footage, and a guy in Scotland spotted this. And this light comes in from the upper left, and it comes down into the center of the screen, towards the center of the screen. He feels like it set down on this skyscraper that was in the far off distance, maybe a mile or so away, and then shot straight up. A lot of analysts had said the object looks to be much closer, and I do agree with that. It does seem to be maybe halfway from that building, but it did seem to come from in between some skyscrapers off to the left. But when it gets towards the middle of the screen, it shoots straight up, and that's what I. Sure, drones can do a lot of stuff, but I don't know for certain that a drone can shoot off that at that quick of a speed, at that great of a distance. And why would it go straight up? If this is going, skyscraper height, that's really high. You'd think they're going to lose control of this thing. So I just want the drone believers or the guys who say it's drones. So for instance, Mark and Ben, who I mentioned earlier, they believe this to be a drone. Mark has a really cool drone. And I want him to prove to me that drones can do that before I'm going to totally let go of this one. So, and I know there's some others, including the witness, who are saying, "Hey, this thing's weirder than just a simple drone, guys."
Well, I might have one myself, and I might have had one for a while. I'm not allowed to use it for the purpose I'd like to use it for, which would be getting footage, but we'll have to have a chat at some point whenever I see you in person. There's a see-through UFO, a triangular see-through UFO that is on your list, that we I guess that this is one of the ones from night vision, captured
Exactly.
on night vision.
Yep, that's one of the night vision ones. And that's another debated part of that particular object is that it appears that you can see stars through the object, which is another aspect that's debated. So, for instance, even though there are these three light configuration, if it was one solid object, you wouldn't be able to see stars through this solid object. You'd see a star kind of disappear behind the solid object, which it's argued that it looks like some of the stars do not disappear behind the object, meaning these are kind of like possibly three separate balls of light, light being loosely because they're in the IR, so not visible light, but light that is not seen by the human eye, but can be seen by the night vision equipment.
You mentioned that there was sort of a little UFO flap, Colorado and Utah, and on your list you have one of the videos that, at least according to your headline, prompted an investigation by NORAD and police. Tell me about that case.
Yeah, this is really cool. And this is another one that really went viral when a reporter went out to Breckenridge, Colorado. They were actually seeing these UFOs all over Colorado and in Utah. And the description is typically a white ball of light that is floating in the air, sometimes doing some peculiar stuff, like sitting in one area for a long period of time before leaving. A lot of people have written this off to balloons. And last year, there was a witness who saw one of these, and he did his own investigation and was able to prove that it was a Google balloon, a loon balloon from this project that Google's trying to do, where they're trying to provide internet, possibly via balloons floating in the sky. So a lot of people have been writing these videos or these objects off as balloons. Well, this local reporter goes out to Breckenridge to take a look for himself, and he actually captures one of these things on video, and he says these are not balloons. He says what he saw sat there for hours before shooting off into the distance. And to him, there's absolutely no way that can be a balloon. And you know, I think anybody's hard-pressed to say that that's a balloon. So this reporter was very enthusiastic about what he saw, which just lent credence to the whole sighting and has kept that one on the radar. It actually was a pretty big story for a while. But people are still having those sightings, and a lot of people are writing them off as balloons. But I think what this reporter saw is pretty strange and has some characteristics that aren't explained by the balloon answer.
We should point out that all the videos we're talking about in these cases, you've posted them on Open Minds so that people can take a look at the clips and read the synopsis of these cases. Instead of going through everyone on the list, I want to touch on some other UFO issues, because in the next hour we'll be opening up the phone lines with questions for you. We mentioned earlier about NASA having this conference to discuss ET life, which to me was an amazing advancement for them, because they've always seemed so hostile to even the merest discussion of that topic. Other governments, as you have reported, other governments around the world have shown much more willingness to, if not embrace it, to at least talk about it. And a couple of developments happened this year. Chile in particular, I know that there was also a multinational conference that was held in France that Jacques Vallée attended, involving people from many countries. And what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think this is just really cool, and I think Chile has a lot to do with it. But what a lot of people don't know is that there are official government UFO investigation agencies still out there. A lot of people don't realize the UK had one just until recently. They closed down in 2009. But the one Western nation which still has a UFO organization is France. And it's called GEPAN, and it's under the CNES, which is their version of NASA, essentially. So, I mean, how cool would that be? That'd be like in the U.S. here, NASA having a UFO investigation department. But they've been open for quite some time. They actually had a representative come to the U.S. a couple times last year. They came to a MUFON conference and also to a conference in South Carolina that was put on. At this conference in South Carolina, there were also some representatives from Chile's UFO investigation organization, CEPAA. They are under their FAA, what is similar to the FAA, but it's a governmental organization out there. So it's kind of a civil aviation organization, although it is supported by the military and works in cooperation with the military and other aviation and aeronautical organizations out there. But what Seth, what I've been doing is a lot of outreach to other countries and creating ties. In fact, we had General Bermudez, who runs that organization at the UFO Congress a couple of years ago, and he said that's his main goal, is to get a network of international organizations to share information. His ultimate goal, to have this headed up by the UN, which Lee Spiegel in the 70s was part of trying to get something like that done as well. But that's his main goal. So he's been doing a lot of outreach. He was reached out to France, and just recently they announced where there is a aeronautical organization society in France that helps out the GEPAN, and they are a group of aviation experts in the private sector. And they have said that now they're going to partner with CEPA and help them with their investigations as well. And this is an organization, interesting enough, which has been interested in UFOs for years. And they've even issued a report just a couple of years ago where they said that we don't know what the phenomena is real. We're not sure what its origins are, and it's quite possible it could be of extraterrestrial origin. So they, along with CEPA, are very open to this idea. And so it's creating this, a lot of international coordination amongst the five or six official UFO governmental organizations out there and some private organizations that are in some of these other countries. So, I mean, the hope is, of course, is that, and Leslie Kane writes about this a lot because she works with CEPA closely, that she feels that she's hearing there are scientists who are interested in this. And she feels it is helping countries like even the United States come closer to having some sort of official UFO investigative group.
You see, Chile, Brazil, there's a couple of South American nations that are pretty open to it, open to the idea of saying, yeah, we investigate it. And some of these, we don't know what the heck it is. I wonder if countries like that get any kind of heat from the United States. I've always suspected that maybe the UK, which... you know, it opened its files, but it's still been generally hostile to the idea that there's anything unexplained going on, whether that's because of they want to be sort of simpatico with the position of the U.S. government.
Yeah, what's interesting is in the last few years, and Lee Spiegel wrote a lot about this because it was regarding him personally, when he was part of that U.N. Contingency, and this was headed by the president of Grenada, where he was trying to get the UN to create a department to investigate UFOs. They were able to find later on records, especially when the UK released some of their UFO files, that of the back channel kind of communication that was going on. And the Americans were kind of like, well, it looks like everybody has it handled. We're happy that they're kind of keeping it, you know, kind of pushing it to the back, but they weren't really upset about it. But the UK cables were, they were very adamant about stifling this whole effort and making sure that it did not happen. They said that they were part of, you know, delaying this whole thing, and essentially they were in the end fairly successful in keeping this organization from happening. So it could be that the Americans were just comfortable with the idea that it wouldn't happen, but the UK was definitely actively out there trying to poo-poo the whole thing.
I just wonder if we still have anyone in government who even works on this stuff anymore. I mean, obviously they pretend that they don't, but maybe in fact they really don't, that they privatized it and they have shut down any kind of formal investigation, still collect information in some unofficial way, you know, through various sensors or whatever. We can talk about that a little bit on the other side. Also, I want to get into what you have on tap for the UFO Congress and then maybe talk about some of the personalities, UFO personalities of 2014 before we open up the phone lines. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us, everyone.